It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You're trying to unwind. You better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You're trying to get your snack. You better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Purple Pants Podcast, episode 170, Perspective. I serve as your humble and also gracious host, Bryce Isaiah, and I thank you so much for tuning in to this brand new episode of the Purple Pants Podcast. If you could be so kind to ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you can find podcasts. The Purple Pants Podcast resides waiting for you to hit subscribe, write a review, and tell a friend to tell a friend. And of course, you know, get them 5 stars up. Give your baby boy some 5 stars. What's the tea, everyone? I hope you had an amazing weekend. Shout out to all the zaddies out there. We just had Father's Day, and we appreciate you for being in your children's lives. I don't think it gets talked about the importance of a father and what the impact that they have on their children's lives, and their children grow up to have children. And the society just really needs fathers in their lives. There's so many people dealing with father issues that they don't even realize that they are struggling with, even me included. Sometimes I look at my dating life and I feel that I can pinpoint a pattern of the men I choose to date with or the things that I settle for. And a lot of it kind of can be pinpointed back to the relationship that I had with my father. So I think that it's just important that on this Zaddy's Day, we celebrate our fathers and, you know, the husbands, your partners, just, you know, really encouraging them to step up to the plate. And if anyone is listening to this and you might have a strained relationship with your child, or you might not be able to be in your child's life the way that you want to, or your relationship with your partner has soured, I just encourage you to do your best to step up. It's never too late. And even if you decide to step up and your children aren't receptive of it, it doesn't hurt to continue to try and continue to show up the best way that you can, because it really is important. You are shaping the future of the world. So I just wanted to give a huge shout out to all the zaddies out there. We also celebrated Juneteenth. Okay. You know, July 4th might be this country's Independence Day, but Juneteenth, baby, down there in Texas, when the last of the slaves realized that, listen, the war is over, we are free, and we just want to celebrate that. I think that Black people are so important to this culture, and, you know, we don't get the recognition that we always deserve. You know, there are a lot of battles that we have to fight on a daily basis. There are a lot of things that we have to overcome. There are a lot of things that have shaped our worldview that other people don't have to go through, and I think that Juneteenth is a day that needs to be celebrated. So, you know, you have baby boy is out here just celebrating to the Most High, and just grateful that Juneteenth is a day, and it has come to be a day in this country that we can celebrate. And it ain't nothing wrong with, if you want to text your Black friend and say happy Juneteenth, you know, ain't nothing wrong with that. It's a celebration. And so I am just really happy to have had a great weekend. It was Father's Day, Juneteenth. Baby boy had went out a couple of times, had to help Wendeezy with his cookout. Woo! And listen, when I tell y'all, baby boy was tired. I woke up Monday morning thinking I had to go to work. Then I realized I didn't have to go to work. And then I just, you know, I just was overwhelmed and tired, but I was just really grateful. I saw all the Father's Day posts, just really seeing the impact that men have in the lives of their children, and just seeing the Zaddies being celebrated, seeing Juneteenth being celebrated. Just, it was a great weekend. The weather in Philadelphia was amazing. Okay. It was my type of weather. Wasn't too hot, wasn't too cold. It was just so perfect. So I had a great weekend. I'm really excited for this week's episode. You know, we got the church announcement. Okay. We are covering P-Valley episode 3. Y'all was telling me about this show on HBO Max. At this point, it's kind of old a little bit, but The Staircase, I got into that. that, I just want to give my few thoughts on The Staircase on HBO Max, Barb's Message, and we got the Freak of the Week. So listen, let me give you my perspective and let's get into these church announcements. This week's church announcements, I wanted to take a little time to talk to the posse. You know, we haven't really been talking lately, so I wanted to just give this time to give you my thoughts on some things. And I think the name of this podcast is called Perspective. And I had a couple of instances within this last week and even over the weekend where it caused me to stop and think about situations that happened. I had a situation happen this weekend and I really felt some type of way. And it was in that moment that, you know, y'all know me, I'm on a road to a better Bryce. And during this situation, I wanted to give this person the benefit of the doubt. And instead of me doing what I normally do and, you know, just be quiet, not say nothing, just not interact with that person and just let it go, I decided to take a look at the situation objectively. And I did this in the moment, you know, like not just days later. I did this in the moment. Maybe a couple of minutes later, but I thought about it. And although I felt like what had happened or the statement that was made was ignorant, you know, dare I say ignorant. But I decided in that moment to just like take a look and try to wrap my brain around this person's perspective of what could have made them come to that conclusion. And when I did that and this person and I were able to talk, I was able just to hear their perspective and have an understanding of why that comment would have, could have, or why it was said. And it just allowed me just to have empathy. It allowed me to put my feelings aside, although I am very much validated in how I felt. And I let the person know because that was my perspective. But instead of just being like, this is how I felt, this is what you said made me feel, I took it a step further and I actively was on the road to a better Bryce in person. And I just thought about that perspective that person must have had. And I was listening and, you know, explaining to them how and what they said, how it was offensive. And I was able just to hear that person. And I was able to let it go and not let it go, but just able to work through it. And I think that that's just so important that in this life, in this world, in this society, we all come with different baggages. We all have different experiences. We all experience life differently. And that's our guides our perspective on how we see things, how we experience things. And it's so easy to get caught up in your own perspective. And your own perspective is rightfully right because that's how you feel. And no one can tell you how you feel. But I think that it's just so important for us to demonstrate empathy. It's so important for us to demonstrate hearing another person's perspective. And it at times can be hard because you might not agree with that perspective. You know, like you might be like, no, that's wrong. But you can't take away the person for having that perspective. And maybe through the conversation, through this interaction, maybe through the disagreement, you're able to open the door to possibly change their perspective on how you look at their perspective and how you react to it, because we're such a reactionary society that when something happens to us, when something is done wrong to us, we react. And, you know, from my perspective, I'm reacting and there's just not a lot of grace. And so in that moment,
I was able to hear this person's perspective, and I was able to share with them how and what the comment was made, how it was, you know, just so many different undertones from that perspective that I took offense to. And I wanted to share that with them. And, you know, instead of me being nasty or instead of me, ooh, I could just talk about this person, like, you know, I dealt with it and had the uncomfortable conversation with the person. And through that conversation, we were able to work through it. I was able to get why they would make that comment. And I was able to explain why that comment, just although in this person's mind may not have meant anything by it, just asking a simple question. But, you know, for me, I'm very intuitive and I pick up on a lot of different things and I'm sensitive. And I was just explaining to this person like how this comment comes across. And although, you know, you're saying it don't mean one thing, but it really means a lot of different things, because in different situations, you wouldn't ask those questions. You wouldn't say those things. And it just really was a groundbreaking moment for me, because a lot of the times I come and I experience these things and then I marinate on it and then I come to this conclusion. But this was your baby boy actively being on a road to a better price and allowing growth, allowing a different perspective to be brought into my eyes, and allowing me to share my perspective and allowing us to come to understanding of where that person might be coming from. And I just wanted to just share that with the posse, because I think that it's so important for us, although we might not agree with a person, we might not like their views, but that's their perspective, right or wrong. And, you know, if you feel as though that perspective is coming from a jaded or not such a great place, your interaction of how you react to that perspective or the statement or the action or the whatever it is, how you might react to it, even though you might be hurt, might be fueling more of that thought process. And just to be able to sit down and work it out, which is really great, and which is why I named this podcast Perspective, because I think that it's just important to understand that people have different perspectives. People see things so differently, and we don't always have to agree on it. But if you approach it with love, if you approach it with compassion, you never know how their perspective, maybe not in that moment, but over time, could change. And so I just wanted to share that with my posse and just continue to try to foster and encourage a place of empathy, a place of love, a place of listening. I think that that is just so important. At times we just want to talk, we want to tell them how we feel, but we don't always listen. And I think listening is so important.
It's a man who, it's a man you, me and potatoes like we're cooking up a great stew. It's a man who, it's a man you, me and potatoes like we're cooking up a great stew.
And we are back this week with your P-Valley Season 2 recap. And I am always delighted, honored, and so excited to be joined by none other than Dr. Sharia Lloyd. You may know her from Survivor China, or you just may know her from being in the streets, because we outside. Let's welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Sharia Lloyd.
Woo, it's hot in Atlanta, Bryce. Hello and happy Juneteenth celebration day.
Yes, how are you doing? How have you been celebrating your Juneteenth?
Well, I am off today, so I'm just kind of resting, relaxing. But yesterday I celebrated with friends. We had a cookout and a little pool day. So we are just celebrating all things Juneteenth, all things Black, and just enjoying being around each other.
Yes, and which is makes me even more excited for us to be talking about P-Valley, which is, you know, a very much a Black show. So I'm just excited to be here with you. You know, we normally cover these recaps with the baby boy that is Chappelle, but
yes,
he is on vacation. But really, we think he is just following the Dirty Dozen tour and just really following Mississippi around.
That's what right. I hope he brings us some tea back from this tour.
Yes. Let us know what's going on with Lil Murda down there. But let's just jump right into episode 3 of, you know, Pink Valley, the Dirty Dozen. And so this episode really starts off with, I guess, the success of the reopening of the Pink.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Pink is open now. And so they are getting back into their zhuzh of things. And we, I guess we get to see Roulette and Whisper kind of like basically being the headliners and really, you know, showing out. Now, we see Roulette is having a private dance. Now, I forget the name of this room last season.
I don't know, but it's just going to be the Boom Boom Room for now.
Okay, yes, the Boom Boom Room. So that's for anybody that's listening. If you ever go to a strip club, they normally have these Boom Boom Rooms where you can pay for a private interaction.
Uh-huh, a little extra service.
Listen, and you know, stripping is, you know, one thing, and sex work is another. And I think that, you know, at times in these establishments, they collide. And that's where I really think the negative stigma comes from. However, at the Pink, you know, Uncle Clifford got a rule for a rule for a rule for a rule. And one of Uncle Cliff's rules is that, you know, first of all, you don't go topless at the Pink, and you don't do sexual favors at the Pink.
If you're on the main stage, you don't go topless.
Listen, if you're on the main stage, okay, girl, that sounded like, you know, that sounded like you, girl, have you worked at the Pink before? That sounded like a...
I just, you know, was listening very intently on this episode. That's all.
Okay. Listen, so you don't go topless on the main stage. And listen, if you hoeing, you out the dough.
Yeah.
And we get to see Roulette has a request. And, you know, somebody wants her to do a favor. And, you know, she says she can't. But then we learn that she does. And at the end of the night, when the ladies come back with their money, it seems that Roulette got a lot more money than the other ladies.
Baby, her bag was big.
Okay. Mercedes is back, and you know her, you know, she can't do all the things that she has done, and she's not being the headliner because she needs to recover, and her bag was given half empty. But listen, Roulette said, I'm optimistic, your bag is half full.
Mercedes is like, whatever, girl,
mind the money that pays you. I think Mercedes said. And then speaking on Mercedes, we see that she is still recovering, girl. Like, you know, she got her, I don't know if it was the surgery, I don't know if that was duct tape around her arm. What that was,
magic work, but it's helped her, apparently.
It's helping her keep that shoulder in place. And so we seen last season, when we first met all of the ladies, Mercedes is clearly the headliner. And, you know, Mercedes has a lot of different men that travel all the way to Chuckalisa, Mississippi to see Mercedes.
For the Mercedes experience.
For the Mercedes experience, and we are not talking the Superdome, okay? And last season, there was a, I guess he was an ex-pro player.
Yes.
And he really wanted to, like, sponsor Mercedes. And we say sponsor. How did he want to sponsor Mercedes, Sharia?
I think it's more of, like, accessibility to her. So, you know, her being fully available when he needs her, and he provides her with some coins for that time.
Listen, I just want to know, how does one go about securing a sponsorship?
I don't know, but I am looking for one if anyone is available.
Okay. I am available, okay? And so we see last season with Mercedes trying to get her gym open and different things, he offered to sponsor her, but Mercedes was like, absolutely not. And it also seemed like Mercedes and him had a friendship, maybe, dare I say, a relationship.
Absolutely. You could definitely feel the vibes that he's been around for a minute and they know each other. They've had deep conversations.
Yes. And this is another thing that I think what the Pink and P-Valley does really well. So again, you got some people that look at, you know, being a dancer as, oh, this, you're, you know, they've got really negative things. But I think Mercedes really highlights to us that, okay, you might be a dancer, but ultimately, at times, you could be a financial advisor to these people. You could be a spiritual advisor. You could be a therapist to these people that are coming in to watch you perform because, like, you're listening to them.
Listen, it's just like almost the golf course. People say this is where the business deals go down. This is the same place with the strip club. Like you said, it's lots of conversations that are happening as a therapist or whatever. Sometimes people just need a listening ear, and that's what these dancers are doing for these men.
Mm-hmm. and my ears always listen, okay? And so we see Mercedes. She visits the spot where the gym is, and it looks like there's a lot of construction still needing to be happening. And we know that she doesn't have the money anymore because her mom took the money for her church.
Mm-hmm.
And now Mercedes' bag ain't coming like how Whispers and Roulette bag is coming. So, you know, she's still trying to figure things out. But she gets this call from her friend, client, mm-hmm. And he basically is saying, like, the sponsorship is still open. Mm. And Mercedes is like, well, I mean, what really does this entail?
Yeah.
And you are married. Would your wife be okay with this arrangement?
It's so interesting that, as you say, you know, we're seeing the human side of her, right? She's not just a dancer. She's a businesswoman. But she also has limits too, right? And you can mm-hmm. see that. That's why she's asking. You're still married. So tell me how this is going to work. I want to know.
Right. And tell me, is you sending me cash? Is it Cash App? Or are you selling it into my account?
Right.
And so we see Mercedes. She initially accepts the deal. Then we go over to where the prayers reside, where the prayers reside. And that is Mercedes' mom's church. And they are still giving out these COVID boxes, which all things is great for the community. And this young lady pulls up and she's asking for two boxes. And they like, well, we can give two boxes. I got to get the pastor, see if the pastor can approve this. And long behold, the young lady that is wanting two boxes, who does it happen to be, Sharia?
Well, this is Mercedes' daughter, and she has grown up a little bit, might I say, since the last season.
She is definitely giving a teenager. Mm-hmm. And first of all, she don't know how to park no car. We can see that.
At all. But she knew what she needed to do to come get that food, though.
Yes. And it was interesting because, you know, the pastor comes over and she's like, hi, I'm Netcha. You know, we bad with names over here and we don't got Brandon who knows.
I know to get us together. Exactly.
But she says, hi, pastor. The pastor says, you want me to slap you in your mouth, girl?
So, listen, her grandmother is so reckless. Okay.
But that's how grandmas be. Could you imagine, like, my grandma's name was Clara. I could only imagine calling, going, hey, Clara. My grandma would say,
she's like, who you talking to?
And, you know, the grandmom's like, why are you over here? Why you need? And the backstory that we know of Mercedes' daughter is Mercedes was young when mm-hmm. she got pregnant. She was in love with a married man yep. who happened to be somewhat wealthy. And when Mercedes gave birth to the child, like, the family kept the baby and they would not allow Mercedes to have the baby. But also it seemed like Mercedes' mom did not want her to
correct.
Have the child.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we just see Mercedes where she's at today, but clearly she might have been a little young, a little reckless.
Yep.
And maybe they didn't think that she was able to have that responsibility. But everything that we know of Mercedes from season one and now is that she is responsible. She, you know, she might be a dancer, but, like, you know, she wants her daughter back and is trying to do everything to get her daughter back.
Yeah, she's really been working to make an effort to get her back for sure.
And it's like, we know from season one that Mercedes' daughter was in a pretty affluent place. We know her dad had died, but the dad's wife was still, you know, affluent and taking care of Mercedes' daughter. So it's like, why Mercedes' daughter mm-hmm. at the pick up a COVID box? And why you need two? It's giving. Is everything okay?
Right. And grandma picked up on that really quickly.
And she said, you look like your mother when you lie.
Ooh, that comment right there hit me.
I said, ooh.
But you can see the softer side of her grandmother at that point. And she basically says, yes, you know what? Don't just get her two. Bring her four boxes. They said four or six. I think four boxes.
Give her four. Load the trunk up.
She's good. Yes. Yeah. So I like to see that side of her for that moment in time.
1,000%. Then we kind of flash back over to the pink, and it is Uncle Cliff and Autumn, and they are, you know, hashing it out about what happened at the reopening. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Cliff is like, I should have never left you here by yourself. You done almost burnt the club down. Mercedes wasn't ready to go on. I blame everything on you.
Mm-hmm.
And Uncle Cliff and Mercedes kind of sort of go back and forth. And it took me a while to figure out what they was doing, because Uncle Cliff would kept painting like, no, it's 90% your fault, 10% my fault. And then they kind of were going back with these percentages of whose fault it was. And they were able to kind of sort of settle on, well, all right, Autumn, we gonna say for purposes that it was 69% your fault and 31% my fault. And now this is unconventional and not the greatest way to negotiate, but I think what they were doing was essentially saying, well, this is what I thought. Tell me what you think. But I essentially am thinking that Uncle Cliff is saying the pink is 69% yours and 31% mine. Because we know that Autumn owns it and Uncle Cliff still has some stake in it. But right. we never knew the breakdown. And I think when Uncle Cliff was placing blame on her, he really was figuring out the numbers of who the ownership.
Absolutely. And I took it just like that, too. At first, I didn't know what they were kind of going back and forth on as well. I was just unsure where it was going, but I definitely think it's about the business. But I think this is what they needed, right? They needed to have this conversation. We've been saying this the last 2 weeks, like, who is doing what? We know Autumn thinks she's the lead, the boss, because she has the ownership part, the money part. But look, Uncle Cliff is still there, and she needs him.
No, very clear she needs Uncle Cliff.
Mm-hmm.
This is my thing, though. And I think this is the thing at times with people in our community. We don't have conversations. We don't have clear. Sometimes it's like, okay, it's assumed. It's this, it's that. But I even feel like this is even more part of the problem. Like, why are we saying, oh, it's 69% show? Like, no, just say you could be 69% owner and I'll be 31%. Like, yes. Be clear.
Be clear. Exactly. Doing too much. Doing way too much.
So that we settle that, and then we get to, I guess, Roulette and Whisper are the headliners at this point, and not for nothing, you know, Uncle Cliff is they open an act. Oh, I was, first of all, I was dying seeing Uncle Cliff on that pole.
I felt like he had been waiting on that moment forever, okay? Forever.
I was just like, no, but I also love it because I think that the editing was bad, but it was bad in a good, bad way. You know how, like, you have those stunt doubles, and it's like, okay, y'all wear the same clothes, and then it's like, I'm gonna come out and act like I'm doing the tricks, but yes. The tricks is really the stunt devil. But I'm like, okay, now when the stunt devil was upside down, flipping on the pole, I'm like, ain't no way on God's green earth is that Uncle Cliff, okay?
Woo! It was a good opening, but like I said, he been waiting on that moment, okay?
Listen, and mind you, the outfit was kind of cute, though.
Little, it was, though, low-key.
Little one-out cutout with the look. You know, first of all, it was giving me, do we shop at the same place I got my outfit from when I did my photo with Ozzy?
Hilarious. It was giving, though. It was giving.
And then we flip back over to the more political side where, okay, Chappelle gonna kill us. Cause listen, I'm gonna ask you, Riri, what's the, now you might notice though, what's the name of the mayor?
No, you know, I don't know.
Okay, neither do I. Y'all know I be bad with names.
Terrible, both of us.
The interim mayor. Now we know. Give me a little backstory. The original mayor, he wanted to move forward with having the casino come in.
Yep.
Uncle Cliff got the people to vote. Mm-hmm. They shut the casino down. Autumn was able to use her money and buy the pink because, you know, the swamp, the swampland of where the pink resides, that is what they wanted to buy to have that for the casino. Autumn bought it back. And now there is a new mayor in town. And listen, not that they had the Black Pastor's chicken dinner.
And somebody was showing out.
Showing out. But it also reminded me of, and you know, today is Juneteenth. And you know how these big corporations, it just reminded me the fact that it was the Black Pastor's chicken dinner. It reminded me of when maybe a couple of weeks ago, Walmart came out with the Juneteenth ice cream.
My goodness. Yes.
Yeah. Or when these other big corporations or your job might be like, oh, we're celebrating Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. We're having watermelon and chicken for lunch.
But it wasn't exactly thought through of how that celebration should take place.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what it was given.
Very much. And essentially, the pastor in which that Mercedes' mom used to be under, who wanted to be a pastor, but the church would not allow women on the pulpit. He is seeming to be heading up this Black Panther. I don't know why I want to say Black Panther.
Panther.
So bad. Okay, Wakanda forever. He seems to be the head pastor heading this up and inviting the mayor here. And essentially, it's really the mayor trying to butter all the pastors up. And mind you, another great thing, what I love about the pink or pink volley, is that this is what really happens. Anytime any major election, you know, happens, they, when they want the Black vote, they get
to the church.
They go to the church. They go to TD Jakes. They go to somebody else, and they get that endorsement of that one mega Black church. And
absolutely,
they think that that's going to win over the Black people.
That's exactly what they do.
Now, despite what we may think of Mercedes' mother and how she did Mercedes, there is something to like about her character. Now, we're going to take out the fact of what she did to Mercedes, okay? But I still stand by, now let me just be clear, I still stand by Mercedes' mom in this whole Black church instance. Because I definitely think there is something that goes on in certain Black churches that they don't allow women to be leaders in the church.
Pulpit. Absolutely.
Now, you can sing, you could be the praise and worship leader.
You do everything but lead from that pulpit.
But lead from that pulpit. And that's one of the reasons why her mom pulled away.
Yep.
And, you know, she started her own church, and she has somewhat of a large following. We see with where the praise resides, where the blessings reside. Like, she is marketing herself. She's giving to the community. She really is, in some ways, doing the work of the people.
Right. In some ways.
Okay, in some ways. Listen, everybody human. Everybody got that one, you know, everybody got that flip of the coin.
Yep.
Now, before we even get into all of like what happened at this meeting, can we just talk about the outfits at this Black pastor's chicken dinner?
It's very classic Black people at a chicken dinner or at an event, right? In the country.
They was dressed to the T.
Yes, they were. It was chicken dinner.
Okay, and Mercedes' mom did not disappoint.
And always giving a hat, too. She's always giving
a hat with a glove and a and you know she had a slip on under that little skirt. You
definitely
know.
Not a slip.
Okay, now here's another thing. Now this is just what I have to ask Riri, because, you know, I got a Black mom. We used to go to church. What is the actual point of a slip, Sharia?
Well, the slip is so that you cannot see through the skirt or the dress. That is what the slip is for.
Okay.
We don't wear those anymore, most of us, but I might be able to dig one out of a drawer if I needed to.
And listen, and if you are a Black woman of a certain age, you have at least three slips, white, black, and nude.
Definitely had a slip. Definitely.
Okay, because I still be seeing them when I go to my mom's house. I still be seeing them like, and child, you know. My mom going to be mad at me. But and tell me if this is true. You don't wash the slip in the washing machine, because anytime a bar wearing a slip the night before is hanging over the bathtub.
It's hanging to dry. That's right, to dry. It's just like pantyhose. We don't really do the pantyhose much anymore. But listen, same thing. Same thing.
I feel like I have very vivid memories.
Tell me you had a Black mama win.
Okay. The night before church, that slip is hanging up over the shower.
Yes. Hand wash only.
Hand wash only. So a Mercedes mom's gets up there, her pink suit, pink hat, and slip. And she is basically saying, like, are y'all going to let this white man who we can never really trust, the white man in these instances that now become figureheads, and all of a sudden they want to make their first stop to the Black church to get the Black people.
And she called him out on it. And mind you, she wasn't up. She's sitting at the table still eating her chicken dinner. Still eating chicken dinner, making her side comments.
Yes. And then, you know, and she also makes a good point that then when she put the chicken down and stand up, she goes, well, first of all, we shouldn't be telling our, now I'll be bad with words, is it parishioners?
Yeah, you said it right, yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Where window at where you need them, okay? She also tells him very kindly, like, I don't think we are at the point where we should be telling our parishioners who or what to vote for.
We haven't made that decision as a group or a church.
Listen, and she also says, like, the white man wants to come in here and tell us that we want to bring this casino in because it's going to bring jobs to our people. And then she brings up several excellent points. Well, sure, it'll bring jobs to our people, but will our people be hired for this jobs? If it's a casino, they're going to need to count. And the way our education system is set up,
we might not be ready for that.
We might not be ready for that, but you got money to bring this casino in, but where's the money to put into the schools that if you're going to bring the casino in, put it into the schools so that then our young people could get the correct education
Absolutely.
And be trained to go into this field. She better preach.
And get these jobs that you guys say are coming.
Mm-hmm. And so the mayor didn't like that, and her point was made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we head over to the Dirty Dozen tour is jumping off, okay? Mississippi yes. and Lil Murda is on tour. And shout out to Big Frida in the house.
You I like that little cameo.
Okay, bounce with a bounce, bounce with a bounce with it. Can you jiggle with it? Jiggle with it. Okay, listen. Love it. It's the representation for the black queers in the black LGBTQ plus community that show up in the pink. Now, listen, I don't know if I need to start a campaign, but listen, season three, does Bryce Isaiah?
Uh-oh. If anybody's listening, he's ready for his tryout.
Listen, I could listen. What you need me to do with Issa? Issa. Listen, can I be a podcaster on the pink? Give me my cameo.
He's ready.
So Mississippi and Murda are on tour. All things are going well with the tour. It seems to be popping off. They are excited to. And interesting enough, you know, here I am. The last two episodes, I was telling y'all, like, I don't know if the tour going to pop off like how it's supposed to pop off. And I really think that Keyshawn, a.k.a. Crooked Letter I, Mississippi, I think that she's really the head, like, you know, she's really what's bringing, you know, the people to the thing. But I think as we are seeing through this Mississippi, not Mississippi, through this the Dirty Dozen tour, that Lil Murda can hold his own.
I mean, he really did. And I actually like the little song that rapping. Okay. So he really did. She's just an added bonus for the show. You know what I mean?
An added bonus. And we also see Mississippi getting a little nervous in the beginning about some of the photos that they're taking because, you know, she does not want her.
Oh, goodness.
Baby daddy.
Yes, child.
The baby daddy doesn't necessarily like Lil Murda because he thinks Lil Murda and Keyshawn have something going on. But Keyshawn understands that it's really just the imagery of it. And she understands that, you know, Lil Murda in love with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. What's funny is she doesn't know who, though.
But so, okay, we gonna get there when we get there. But does she or does she not, though?
I felt like she didn't know.
Okay. So listen, keep that in mind, Purple Pants Posse, because I got something for Riri.
Okay.
So then we are, Mercedes is, we've seen her agreeing to the sponsor. Now she is going, she's working. She arrives at this penthouse studio or somewhere looking fabulous. And while she's getting ready to go up in there, the phone rings and it's Mercedes' daughter, which also leads me to be a little concerned. Like, you know, we don't really get to see this much interaction of Mercedes' her daughter. Right.
Yes. Well, and she calls several times while she's there.
Right. And it's like, well, girl, what's going on? And one, we allude to the fact that, like, when not Mississippi, when Mercedes' daughter came to get the COVID baskets, baby, the way she parked that car was like,
because she probably was not supposed to be driving.
Okay. And, you know, it leads us as the viewer to be like, well, what's going on? Then when Mercedes is on the phone with her daughter and Mercedes is like, listen, I'm working. I hit y'all back. Then the camera pans out and we get to see Mercedes' daughter's stepmom passed out on the couch.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if it is she's got a drinking problem that's just kind of sort of reared its head, but I think of it in the context of with COVID, people being home, there were a lot of people that I think felt themselves in a not healthy cycle of being isolated. And the only kind of sort of thing really to do to kind of like make the isolation fun was turn to a little devil's juice.
That was her coping mechanism because I don't remember her being that unstable in the past seasons.
Yeah, like it was giving what is going on?
Yeah, she's definitely a different person.
So Mercedes is there to meet her sponsor. And, you know, she's all like, ooh, look at this. And then all of a sudden, the sponsor's wife comes down.
And she's about to take a sip of that champagne.
Okay. And the wife and, you know, Mercedes is like, ooh, okay, I wasn't expecting this. But hello. And the wife is very cold to Mercedes. Yes. Like, very cold. But, you know, the husband comes down and she gives Mercedes the papers. Like, listen, baby girl, we're going to need you to sign part 6, part 7.3B, 36. Listen, they get her
just
to sign
like
this NDA down. Listen, you might be sleeping with my money, my husband.
We sign your life away.
Sign your life away. It's like going to a party with Beyonce. They say you can't go to a party with Beyonce unless you sign the NDA.
That's exactly what it was. She was about her business right then and there.
And it is just interesting. And so Mercedes is trying to be friendly. And this is, again, what I love so much about Mercedes is I think there's one point where Mercedes is like, oh, my God, this house is so beautiful.
Oh, my goodness. And the wife corrector said, you mean beautiful?
You mean beautiful. Now, here is the wife trying to exert her power and like, okay, you might be a little stripper girl, but I'm educated and I'm way better than this. Hmm. And fast forward to the husband is now there and he's like, you know, Mercedes and the husband are talking and the wife is there. Okay. And I ain't mad at her. Like, listen, I'm be right here. Let you know. Mm-hmm. And Mercedes is like, oh, I really like these photos on the wall. And the husband is like, oh yeah, that's where my wife used to be, a photographer. And the wife like used to be.
Correction. I still am.
And it goes to show you how perceptive Mercedes is. Mercedes sees him kind of sort of belittling his wife's talent. And then Mercedes goes and looks at the photos and she analyzes the photos in such like the way she might be saying beautiful, but my girl can articulate and can get into a photo.
Yes.
And the wife is really like, I've never heard someone explain my photos that way. And we get to see Mercedes and the wife bond.
They had a moment, right? She let her guard down just because of that.
They had their guard down. Now, the husband like, well, before you go, wife, I want you to see this Mercedes experience.
Wife was trying to fight it, too. Like, no, no. He's adamant. Like, yes, yes, you're going to see this.
And Mercedes does the Mercedes experience. And again, more barriers breaking down. I think that people think one way of dancers and another thing. And then I think that Mercedes and in this moment really highlighted one, dancing is an art.
Yeah.
It's a sport. And it's many entertainment. Ways, entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's many ways that you can look at it. And in this scene where Mercedes is dancing, you really see the art and the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
And child, so much, the wife is mesmerized.
Didn't see this coming, huh?
Didn't see this coming. The wife is so mesmerized, you know, Mercedes start the show, and then, you know, she getting ready to do her thing. She turn around, the wife naked, like, okay, you know what? I'm intrigued. I want to have fun, too.
And Mercedes' face is like, oh, her, was like, what's going on here? That's how she looked.
What's the tea? But listen, you signed them NDAs, Mercedes, so listen, you got to go with the flow.
What was this discussed in advance?
I mean, right. Okay. You might have to throw another 10 bands on this for me. But I love it. And, you know, the whole time while Mercedes is dancing, shout out to Tiana Taylor because they was playing Tiana Taylor's song. Yes, you know. It's a Tiana Taylor song is playing and all the middle of it is like her daughter calling.
Yep.
And she runs, turns it off, and she calls back again and again and again and again and again. And she answers the phone from her daughter's number. And who is calling? Riri.
Who called? It was
the police.
Oh, the police.
The police, man.
Oh, yeah. So the police called out at this point. It's like, ma'am, we need you to come and get your daughter and or her stepmother. I don't know if they knew, you know, what the situation was, but at this time it's like, we need a guardian to come. So this is now when Mercedes is finding out what's really going on or what's been happening. So she is livid and has to interrupt her job for this, to go and save them both.
And she gets over there and she really gets to lay into the wife. Like, girl, she got the wife in the bathtub spraying her down with the hose.
Like, wake up. You know how you do a drunk person? That's what she was doing.
Yes. And they get to have this conversation where Mercedes is just like, you know, look how the tables have turned. Like, I'm coming to save you. And all I ever wanted was my daughter.
That's it.
And the wife makes a revelation where Mercedes was always told that it was the wife that never wanted to give back the daughter. And the wife makes this revelation that it, child, you think I want to look at my husband's infidelity every day of my life?
She didn't have a choice, basically, is what she said.
And it was the husband that wanted it. And Mercedes is like, well, he died. Why even after he died? And then the wife says, goes to make another revelation that on his deathbed, he wanted her to care for the daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, the daughter's listening to this whole conversation.
And so we can just even get into that. And what I think is so interesting about that conversation, we see the daughter being like visibly upset at that. And here I am thinking that the daughter probably is more upset at hearing her stepmom say, like, you think I wanted to look at my husband's infidelity for the rest of my life and all of this stuff. But then when I think about it, I'm pretty sure the daughter probably already felt that energy and don't really like her anyway. And so after the stepmom go to sleep, Mercedes' daughter has a conversation with her and is really asking her, like, why you never came and got me?
Yeah. And she's alluded to this before, and she's just said, you keep making promises. You're saying you're coming, but you never come.
And to Mercedes' defense, it's like, you know, she does live a non-conventional life. Her hours aren't the same, like, you know, and, you know, there are reasons, but, ooh, baby, when the daughter calls her to the carpet, and Mercedes always loves to say, I was 15 when you was born. And Mercedes' daughter says, well, you didn't stay 15 forever.
So basically, you could have come to get me a long time ago.
And she says, you always have excuses. And for me, I just thought that this was really powerful in the sense that, like, you're right. Mercedes does make a lot of excuses. And I think in Mercedes' mind, she thinks she's doing what's right. But really, like, you are using the fact that your daughter is being taken care of. You do want more time. It really reminded me of, like, as if the roles were reversed. It really reminded me, I feel like we hear a lot of these things that Mercedes was saying from a father that is not existing in a child's life. I feel like we hear a lot of those things from the man's perspective of, like, everything that Mercedes was saying. We normally hear that from, like, the father that's the absentee father.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I feel for Mercedes at the same time. Like, I know she's trying to do things better. She's working for something. But at the same time as well, it's like, you've had ample opportunity, right, to make it right, to go and get her. But like you said, we usually hear it from the men. She's continuing to basically prolong this, right? Until whatever that time is that she feels is right. So she's making these excuses along the way. And now her daughter's picked up on it.
Right. And it's like, you are comfortable with the way that your life is. You see your daughter when you want, and you feel like you have convinced yourself that I'm working for this goal to get my daughter back. But in reality, your daughter is right here.
Absolutely. And she wants you now.
And right, she wants you now. And so it's like, what do you do? Another thing that I thought was so great last week, you had brought this great point up, Ree, is that you said, why every time we see Mercedes, she look mad.
Just angry.
And it was funny because, of course, I was cracking up when I watched this. I was going to text you, but I was a little tired. Yes. But the first couple of scenes we see Mercedes, she looks so mad.
Like everything she's mad about, everything, life in general.
I was cracking up. I was like, oh my God, Sharia was right. But this is what I will then say, because again, why I love podcasting about shows that I am really into, and I love hearing different people's perspective. Like, hearing your perspective on that last week made me kind of sort of like intently be analyzing Mercedes. And you know what I came to the conclusion was that you are absolutely right. But the only time we see Mercedes not in the Sharia said mad face is when she's with her daughter.
Very true. She does soften up then.
It's like, wow. Like, and I don't know what that means for anything, but I think that it was just so, like, you know, anytime my daughter called, anytime she's around her daughter, it was a different Mercedes.
Absolutely. And
so interesting. But you know, that was that. And then so I guess the pink is opening, and we we see Dre. We haven't really seen Dre much this episode.
No, we haven't.
And mind you, here's the thing. Like, I don't know what it is about Dre, but I don't like Dre.
What don't you like?
I just don't like him. Like, maybe it's the fact, I don't know. I just feel like, as much as we say, like, we don't really know Autumn's intentions, yeah. I don't really like Dre's intention. I feel like, I don't know. It's just something
sneaky.
Yes. And, you know, maybe it's here his wife is, damn, wherever they live at, you know, got scars on her face mm-hmm. because she is a nurse working in, like, the ground zero of COVID from where they are from.
Yeah.
And, you know, she just love her man. And it's like, you know, her man ain't really doing much, but she calls Dre to tell Dre that, like, I spoke to my father and my father said that he'd be able to offer you a job.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not ready.
I'm not ready. I can't take it. And again, maybe this softens my heart a little bit to Dre is that, like, he clearly doesn't want to take a job from it. Like, it's like a handout. He don't Absolutely. Want the handout.
He wants to get it himself.
He wants to get it himself. But do you want to get it yourself or do you want to get in Autumn's? You want to get between Autumn's slip.
And that's the thing. That's why it's so kind of sneaky. Like, we don't really know what his motive is.
And it's like, you know, it's just interesting enough. But Uncle Cliff and Autumn are together at the Pink. And Corbin is with Dre and they make another offer on the Pink. Now it's a little bit more than $500,000.
Yeah.
And you know, Autumn immediately rejects it. And Uncle Cliff is telling Autumn, like, girl, you sure you want to do that? Like, I don't think we ever going to get that $10 million from the Pink. Mm-hmm. And Autumn is saying, well, listen, baby, if this casino deal goes through, you better know what, like, you know, you best to know mm-hmm. what the tea is that's coming our way.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, no, know your worth. And, you know, Uncle Cliff is like, oh, okay. And he's like, well, listen, what do you say? I think $3.1 million
mm-hmm.
is a whole lot of money because, right. you know, that 31% off of 69.
Exactly.
It's a lot. So, you know, and then it raises the question that, okay, so, you know, I've been saying Autumn sneaky and I stand by what I stand, but she is, her and Uncle Cliff are having this conversation and she says that she's turning down the offer and she wants the $10 million. To me, it's like she is again, she's not saying it, but I feel like it is implied that if I'm declining this offer because it's not what I want, but that means you are willing to sell.
It definitely sounds like she's willing to for the right number, though.
So, right. But, and, you know, our whole thing is like, I guess we assume that, like, we as viewers, and I'm sure Brandon or Chappelle, mm-hmm. he don't want the Pink to be sold.
Yeah.
it just is like, oh, okay. So maybe Autumn and Uncle Cliff have a more understanding than we do not know of.
Possibly. And I think that nobody wants the Pink to be sold, but if it is, it has to be the right amount. It has to be worth it for them. Like, they know what this is going to do for the community, you know, or could do to the community, one or the other.
Right. And it also drives home the point of when she declines the offer and Uncle Cliff says, like, you might want to take it. And then Autumn's like, no. And then Autumn then says something to the effect of Uncle Cliff, like, well, whatever money we get, like, what you gonna do with that? And Uncle Cliff mm-hmm. is like, well, what are these girls gonna do?
Yeah.
And Autumn's like, why is that your concern? But again, I think it goes to the difference of Autumn and Uncle Cliff. Autumn is just somebody that just happens to come into this town.
Yeah.
And, you know, Uncle Cliff lives here. Uncle Cliff may be a lot of things, mm-hmm. but he cares about the community. And he, more importantly, cares about the girls that people seem to disregard as nothing.
Yeah, and he's willing to sacrifice himself for the betterment of everybody else, whereas Autumn is like, it's only about herself.
Listen, and Jada might be Autumn in this predicament.
Listen, I think we both would.
Okay. And so then we get to see Corbin and Dre talking about how Autumn is not going to, whatever little bit they offered, she ain't going to sell. Then mm-hmm. we get this interesting revelation that the current mayor that had the chicken dinner with the pastors, he is just the interim mayor. And yeah. that at some point in time, I don't know if it's going to have to be a special election or whatever, but there is going to have to be a new mayor in town. And last week we seen when Dre discovered the water with his uncle, we mm-hmm. also discovered this VHS tape of Dre and the old mayor, which, you know, Brandon not here, and we don't know the old mayor name.
Yes.
But, you know, he was a shyster, but he was mm-hmm. there for the people. And although he might not have been the greatest guy, I think that Andre in this video sees how much the mayor loved Andre right. and was pouring into Andre like mm-hmm. a father.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I guess they toy with the idea of like, well, listen, if you don't want the current mayor that's running, why not you run?
Yes.
And again, it also leads to the conversation of Dre's wife being like, well, my daddy said he can get you a job. And Dre like, no, it like, you know, he wants to strike out on his own. And, mm-hmm. and what better time than now? We also know that Dre still is still a resident of Chuckalisa. When his uncle or godfather was running for mayor, he states that like how it was so important for him to come back home and cast the vote for the first black mayor of Chuckalisa.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Corbin, we know, is the brother of this one family who's a white family. But Corbin, you know, he mixed and is the outsider. But, you know, he has access to this fund. And he like, well, I might be crazy enough to actually sponsor this idea.
Mm-hmm. Left us with a little cliffhanger on that one.
I said, well, oh, OK, well, listen, that has to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So let's also get back to y'all know one of my favorite parts of the show. Lil Murda and
Mississippi.
Well, not even that, girl. By Mississippi, Lil Murda and Uncle Cliff.
Oh yes, this continuing love story.
This continuing love story. So first of all, Uncle Cliff is on the Instagram, like Mississippi and Lil Murda look a little comfortable in these photos.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Uncle Cliff, although he has his guard up, he still is searching the social media and checking the grams. How many of us are guilty of somebody that we like or love or, you know, whatever? Mm-hmm. Do we not
check in every now and then, look at the picture, see what's going on?
If y'all don't believe me now, go to your Instagram or Twitter right now and go to that search button and read me your top 10 searches, because I guarantee
everybody that searched their little X at some
okay.
point.
Okay. Your Lil Murda is in there.
Yes.
And although I am, and I said this before and I'm going to say it again, I'm on Uncle Cliff's side. Boy, are they making it a case for Lil Murda to win my heart over. We see this scene after the show. Lil Murda, first of all, he got his hair dyed blonde. And Mississippi put a little oil. First
oil
of all, if you anybody that know, if you bleach blonde dye your hair, you know it is going to strip your hair of the nutrients.
Now.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you are black.
Yes.
You know, our hair is oily. That blonde is going to strip it. You got to oil that scalp.
Add some moisture to it.
Okay, you need to get some shea moisture or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Mississippi is moisturizing Dre's head. And while she's doing that, Chuckie, thank you. Oh, come on, Chappelle. We might not know all the names, but Riri know. Riri know Lil Murda. And so Lil Murda is writing a note. And child, it took me out because, again, I feel like the way that they describe, sometimes we all know men can be jerks, insensitive, and not really know how to convey their feelings.
Yes.
And child, Lil Murda was writing a note that said, I guess I miss you.
It's the I guess for me.
And Keyshawn, a.k.a. Mississippi, really calls him to the front. She like, you a rapper, and this is what you are sending home to this lady that you care about?
Okay, so that's what made me think that she doesn't know who it is, because she said this lady.
Yes, and so I get to get Dr. Lloyd's bags together here. Now,
okay,
listen.
Get me together.
No, but I also think that two things came to my mind in this conversation, because when she said that, I'm like, oh, she don't know the tea.
Yeah.
However, Keyshawn knows that Lil Murda is not into her. And the whole point of how they came about, you know, her stepping in for Mercedes on One Night Only, and like the illusion that they are giving to the world.
Uh-huh.
She knows this if you watch from season one. And Keyshawn has been I don't know if you remember, but Keyshawn was the one that walked in on Uncle Cliff and a little murder in the bank office in season one.
Oh, you know what? I forgot about that.
But
I forgot.
Uncle Cliff or Little Murder never saw it. And Keyshawn kind of sort of kept it to herself.
Yes.
And we know that Keyshawn has never brought this up to Little Murder mm-hmm. before. Yep. And in this moment, she says, like, well, the lady that you are writing, like, you need to know. So then Keyshawn goes back to the drawing board, and I forget what he wrote. He just wrote, I love you.
I love, yeah.
And then Keyshawn, like, now how you go from one thing to another? Like, mm-hmm. you, it's given much. And, you know, she's like, and then, you know, Little Murder trying to get to my heart. He's like, well, that's the only thing I could think about, shorty. And then Keyshawn has a revelation. And, you know, she's like, well, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. And then Keyshawn says these words that an Uncle Clifford only comes around in a lifetime once.
Oh,
and
okay.
Little Murder looks up. He has a confused, somewhat look on his face, but I think that in that moment, Keyshawn is revealing to Little Murder that I know. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, I think two things are for sure in this moment is that we see Little Murder's reaction is like a little apprehensive at first, but then he kind of like continues to go into the story or continue to whatever. And I think two things happen for me here is that Keyshawn realized, or Little Murder realized, if Keyshawn knows about Uncle Cliff, her interaction with him did not change. And actually, she was still loving and caring. And I think that, again, these are little pieces. But, you know, for me, for somebody who intensely watches these portions of it, I think that it was
eye-opening for him to be like, well, okay, maybe this is okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go back and watch that little section just because you brought that to my attention in this way.
Yeah, because, you know, I get into it. And for me, I felt like, and again, shout out to the actor that plays Little Murder, because I think that his acting was so on point, because you got to look at the way that he looks at her. He does not confirm.
Yeah.
But you just see the relationship in his body language. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot of things going on with, and so there are couple of things. So then he gets that opening where he's like, oh my God, like maybe this is okay. Then his brother or cousin that got out of jail, that's still in the gang, like we didn't really talk about much about this, but you know, while they was on tour, a huge fight happened, shots was being, like, you know, a lot was going on.
Doing a lot. Mm-hmm.
And the cousin that's supposed to be the security guard, that is a friend of Little Murder, who we learn after, you know, they have a little smoke, little drink on the balcony. I think that the reasoning for this conversation was to really show the dilemma in Little Murder's mind in which that he's holding, because mm-hmm. the bodyguard slash brother, who is extremely loyal to Little Murder, he says some very deep things where Little Murder, they talk about this time that this guy tried Little Murder in jail and Little Murder beat him up, and then Little Murder had to go to the hole, and then this friend that just recently got out of jail, he then explains that the person that tried Little Murder was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And more than likely at the hands of him.
Of him, yep.
Mm-hmm. And he then had to do a lot more time in jail than Little Murder. And he was also sent to solitary confinement. Yep. And listen, we can talk about solitary confinement a different time, but it's... you don't even treat an animal or a dog like that.
Absolutely.
It plays with your psyche. It plays with a lot of different things. And the fact that they still use these inhumane tactics in prison and in our jail system is crazy.
Yes.
And the person explains to Little Murder that when he was in that hole, it was like a dark, dark, dark hole, like at the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And, you know, him and Little Murder basically having this conversation, they're like, who would have ever thought that your raps and your rhymes would have taken you to this far, and like, you're here to help me. And he's saying that, like, even when they were in jail, Little Murder used to write rhymes on tissue paper. And this person is saying to him that at his darkest hour, the silly little rhymes that Little Murder was writing to him essentially, like, was the light at the end of the tunnel
that
for
helped
him
get through. Mm-hmm.
And Little Murder and him dap it up and acknowledge it. And I think that for me, now, y'all know I could be taking a little deep here, is that Little Murder feels this content or this this feeling that he has to hold on to this lifestyle or this image, because this guy that essentially is his brother that killed for him, and that, I mean, I don't know, I can only assume that he probably would not be here if Lil Murder came out that he was gay, but we don't know. But that's what Lil Murder is assuming. But like, he has to hold on to this image and he can't reveal his true self to him because this like man just essentially told him like he owes his life to him.
Right, absolutely.
And so I think that, like, again, they would show the two scenes back to back like that because, again, for me, I feel like it's the dilemma of Little Murder.
Mm-hmm. You better be deep.
Yes, listen, you know, with stuff like this, when it comes to murder, I get into it because, listen, I y'all know me, I'll internalize it and, you know, into my own life. And then we have the we get a scene where Uncle Cliff is reading the postcard that he, we're assuming, that what Lil Murder went with, and basically it was like, wish you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, child, that's the best that Mississippi gave to Lil Murder.
Child, but he sent the postcard.
But he sent the postcard.
Gesture.
And then, and we see it seems to soften Uncle Cliff's heart. But for me, it was when the and Uncle Cliff is sitting at his dressing mirror in his room. The camera widens out, and what do we see on the mirror? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It was a note. Wait.
So Uncle Cliff is reading the postcard. He was in, I guess, New Orleans.
And yes.
Again, the postcard was very generic. I was upset that, like, okay, we went from, I guess I miss you, to I love you, to wish you were here. And I was just like, ugh. But when the camera widens out, we see on Uncle Cliff's mirror that there are about 8 other postcards. And so y'all know, okay, I ain't gonna lie, I got a little teary-eyed on that when I saw that, because I was just like, oh my God.
Which means it's time for Uncle Cliff to soften up a little bit.
Okay, I mean, you're right. I mean, listen, you're right.
He's trying. It's time.
He's trying. And I think that, again, that's all that we can ask is that. But again, but okay, wait, no. Spicy Brycey is back. Spicy Brycey is back. Spicy Brycey is back. Here's my issue, Riri.
Okay.
Is, yes, you are trying, and I get that. But my issue is, you are still, how I would perceive it is, you are still trying in the dark.
Yes. No, he definitely, like we talked about before last week, he definitely needs to kind of come to the light a little bit. But I think he's making an effort enough where a conversation can take place, at least,
I mean,
between them.
You're right. I'm not mad at that. You're not mad at that.
Just a conversation.
And then the last thing that we get to is that Big Al, the security guard. And I forget, do you remember there was last season, what was her name? Not Gambit.
Gidget.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Chappelle would be proud. Gidget is one of the only white strippers at the Pink. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen her this season. We did get a clip of her last week where she was on the phone, FaceTiming people. She was in Florida saying, like, child, listen, COVID ain't happening in Florida. Y'all should come down here. Mm-hmm. Gidget also had a love interest, was this other young man that we, you know, haven't really seen. I don't really remember. But what I do remember from the scene was that although Big Al is like the head of security, he is also still running
distribution.
An illegal distribution out of the Pink with Gidget's boyfriend. And Gidget's boyfriend runs the trucks. He drops it off at the Pink. Uncle Cliff doesn't know anything about this. Uncle Cliff will be mad because, again, the problem with this is that they want to shut the Pink down, and they want to shut the Pink down for any reason. And last season they attempted to. However, if they ever found that the Pink was a part of this, like, distribution deal, this will be all the more reason to shut the Pink down.
Mm-hmm.
But Big Al is still doing it anyway. Now, Roulette and Gidget's old boyfriend kind of sort of like have this little flirty little thing, little something, 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 something. Yep. Now, the last scene we see is that Roulette is still breaking the rules. And actually, it looks as if she is being an escort outside of the thing. And she gets out of a car and, you know, she says, if you want to go for another ride with Roulette, call me. And as Roulette is getting out of the car, she sees Big Al and Gidget's boyfriend, and they looking at her like, ooh, girl. Mm-hmm. And at the same time that they are doing that, one of the boxes fall out.
And now she looking at them like, ooh.
And Gidget gives them that wink like, you keep my secret, I'll keep your secret.
Yep.
Now,
that's going to be interesting that develops.
Yes. And then the last thing that we forgot to talk about was Mercedes' mom, after the pasta chicken cook dinner, pasta chicken for the black pastas, she tried the mayor. The mayor wanted to woo-woo the people over. She left doubt in some of the pastors' minds.
Yes.
And so we see the mom at her church, and they are, first of all, I ain't never seen no church that, like, when you get the tithes and offering money, child, they put it in a
not the money machine.
The money machine.
Oh, yes.
And the police and the mayor stop by and they serve her. Mm-hmm. And essentially they serve her with breaking an ordinance of Chuckalisa that the mayor has signed into as a legislation or an emergency law, basically saying that churches cannot operate at 50% capacity. They have to operate at, well, they can't operate at 100% capacity. And they have to operate at 50%, and it has to be 6 feet apart. Now, that is such an issue for Mercedes' mom because whether people believe it or not, churches are a money-making entity.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, we don't really know what Mercedes' mom is doing with all this money, but maybe, you know, she really wants to buy that mega church or whatever. But if she were to not, I think why she is also being so successful is, one, she's giving to the community, and she's operating church back as normal.
Right. Right.
Which means the money can reside through the church.
Absolutely.
And this mayor is now saying that you can't and you're breaking this this rule. And what was the thing that the mayor said? He said, you know, you pissed off a neighbor or something. He said, you mess with the wrong neighbor. And so essentially he is forcing Mercedes' mom to shut
it down.
Now, if we know Mercedes and we know her mom, that ain't, she gonna figure out some way. But Mercedes' mom left the mayor with this. She said, if I mess with the wrong neighbor, baby, you done effed with the wrong bitch. Okay?
And she means that.
Means it. And so listen, episode one might have been like not the greatest. We had to catch back up on people.
Yeah.
Episode two was warming up, but baby,
three is giving what it needs to give. Yes. So this episode really made me say, okay, it's getting better. Now we're really getting into the stories again, figuring out where everybody's going, and the juicy tea and drama is here.
And I'm here for it. And yes. I'm just so grateful that I get to cover the P-Valley on the Purple Pants podcast. And I'm so happy that my sister, girl, friend, Riri, is here with me.
Yes. Thanks for having me. Because you know what I love about this, though, is we both hear and see different things as we watch it. So like now I got to go back and watch a couple little parts just to hear what you mentioned so we can hear a different perspective. I love it.
Yes. I know. I love it. I love it as well because you always give me such a different perspective as well. And that, like, you know, I'll be focusing now on Mercedes. He's like, is she really always mad? She really is.
Yeah. I got to go see what you would talk about this time.
Yes. But before we go, Riri, let the people know where you at, where they can follow you at, where they can see these spicy Instagrams at. Okay. Where she not breaking none of Uncle Cliff's rules, maybe.
No, we have my own rules on my page. Okay. You can find me at Survivor Riri, R-E-R-E, on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, and we'll be back next week. Hopefully, Brandon is back from the Dirty Dozen tour. We will have to get that to you. But
yes.
Listen, this has been your P-Valley Season 2 coverage.
Have a good one.
Keeping the menu rolling. Keeping the menu rolling. Keeping the menu rolling. Keeping it rolling.
And keeping the menu rolling, Purple Pants Posse, I've been wanting to watch this show on HBO Max called The Staircase for the longest time. Somebody, I can't remember who, but somebody was telling me like, oh, you got to watch this. It's so good. And it's based on real life events that happened. Like, it's so good, baby boy. The type of dramas and true crime shows and podcasts that you listen to, you would love it. So I don't know about y'all, but for me, I have like a note in my phone of like recommended movies and shows because, you know, there's so many good things out and people have so many different perspectives on things. So I always like to, at some point in time, watch the shows that people recommend. And mind you, my list is probably about like 75 shows and movies that eventually I'll get to, you know, on a rainy day, snowy day, on a hot day when I'm just in the house. So over, I would say maybe last week, I just got done work. I was stressed out. I wanted to take a nap and I was scrolling through HBO Max. You know, when you be on like Hulu, Paramount Plus, Netflix, you know, whenever you want to watch something, it seemed like it nothing ever speaks to you or you be trying to find something for hours to watch. And so this is like one of those afternoons where I'm just scrolling through Netflix. Get the HBO and HBO was like recommended for you, The Staircase. I'm like, oh, God. I don't know what this is going to give. And for me, whenever I watch something, I've got to be in the watching mood for it. You know, sometimes I got to be a little tired and I can watch it. I've got to have like high energy to watch it. Like, you know, you don't know what type of mood you need to be in for when you watch something like this. But I said, you know what? Baby boy, just press play. Now, I know The Staircase came out sometime this year, a while ago, and I know a lot of people were talking about it and podcasting about it. But I was like, I'm going to stay away from it because I want to watch it. So, give you my little brief synopsis of it. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. But it doesn't really matter because I think that it's important for like your perspective when you watch it. Now, this is based on some true live, true real events in Durham, North Carolina. Also, before I even get into all of that, Netflix has a documentary about this case that happened in Durham, North Carolina. And I'm happy that I watched the series first because now I want to watch the documentary. And for me, I love when you watch like stuff based on real life events and then you watch the documentaries and you can see what the actual people look like and you can see like the different characters and how they chose to portray them and then you get to see the real life thing. So I'm excited that I'm going to start the documentary soon. But baby, The Staircase, after episode one, I think it's about 7 or 8 episodes. After episode one, I was hooked. Also, The Staircase for me, when I was watching it, the episodes are like 44 minutes, but baby, they felt like they was 2 hours long. It felt like each episode was a movie in itself. So that already kind of sort of got me into it because I love things like that. Basically, y'all, the breakdown is this guy named Michael Peterson is married to his wife, I believe it's his second wife, Kathleen Peterson. And all together, they have, I believe, 5 children. 2 are Michael's biological children from another marriage. Then 1 daughter is Kathleen's daughter, I believe, from a previous marriage. And then the 2 other daughters are not Michael's biological children or Kathleen's biological children. They are children that Michael knew growing up when he lived in Germany and their parents died and he took them in with his first wife. The first wife didn't work out. And then when he got married to Kathleen, they both raised them as their own children. So they've got a very verse wide range of like connections to the children, but the children seem to be very close as children. So basically, and Kathleen works at an investment firm and she's the breadwinner. Michael, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell Michael do. Okay. Besides spend other people money. He's like a writer or something. He's got books, but we hear and watch the story from Michael's perspective. And basically in a nutshell, Kathleen died. She died on the staircase and it looks like murder. Okay, mostly the majority of the evidence is pointing to Michael. However, I would say in the first 3 full episodes, the way that they tell this story, you get to see different people's perspective. You get to see Michael's perspective. You get to see Kathleen's perspective. You get to see the kids' perspective. And I mean, after seeing all of the perspectives, you come to your own perspective. But I would say this, the first couple of episodes where clearly, you know, Kathleen dies. But the way the documentary is set up, there's a constant timeline. They are always flashing back, flashing forward, and not necessarily current because everything happened. But then in the process of this series, it's almost like the current time. So it's like you're constantly getting flashback pre-Kathleen's death, after Kathleen's death, and kind of sort of like current. And I really want to believe that Michael did not do it. But baby, spoiler alert, he got convicted. Then after he got convicted, he got off due to a technicality. Then he had to sign an Alford plea, which essentially is basically saying you're guilty, but you can maintain your innocence. And all the while he is going through this trial of Kathleen, a film company from France reaches out to him because they want to document like the American court system, and they were looking for this case. And so all the while he is going through this experience in this court hearing, this film company from France is making a documentary. Now, I don't know if that's the documentary that is on Netflix, but I really hope it is, because the documentary crew plays such a crucial point in the series, The Staircase. Now, again, I go back to the first perspective of Michael that we get is that he's like this loving, adoring father. He loved Kathleen. And we learned that he is bisexual. He likes the men's. And, you know, once the district attorney finds out about that, they try to spin the story. And again, this is when you're watching the first 3-4 episodes, like, you know, you're really hearing it from Michael's perspective. They try to spin the story as if like they are using the fact that that Michael was bisexual and was hooking up with these men, that Kathleen found out about it, and that's how he killed her. Now, I think the perspective of Michael being bisexual is just such an interesting perspective, because, you know, Michael says that Kathleen knew about it, and we know she did not know about it. But, you know, Michael says that he lied about it because he knew the optics of how that could sway a jury. But it's just so interesting to see the different men that Michael was hooking up with, the relationships that he kept with. And it just, like, as time goes on through the documentary, the show, we get to see that Michael lying. And I think more of, as we get to like maybe episode 4 and 5, you know, we get to see maybe Kathleen's experience. We get to see how the DA puts it together, because another thing about this show, Bay Bang, so Kathleen falling, being killed and murdered at the bottom of the steps, they play that scene a lot of times. And so there are some very gory parts, because they play of like how it could have happened if, you know, what Michael said is true, how it could have happened if what the DA puts it together. Child, they even got this owl theory, baby. And when you watching it, you know, because now we went through the perspective of Michael. Now we're like, okay, maybe he did do it. You know, once we get the perspective of the DA, and then after he is found to be guilty and is in jail, Bay Bang, one of the editors from the France film documentary, a female, she kind of falls in love with him. They become a couple, and she makes it her duty to figure out that he's innocent. And the next door neighbor, Larry, is a hunter, an owl enthusiast. And they come up with this theory that an owl attacked Kathleen. Now, when you are watching the show, there are a lot of things that allude to, you know, there is one time that, like, you know, they're flashing back to Kathleen, like, walking up the steps, and we see that she trips, and we're like, oh my God, really good. Are they trying to show us that, like, did she trip? Then they have this bat infestation in their attic that Kathleen is obsessed with. There's just so much stuff that lead us to believe, like, oh my God, is there really something more to this story? Then his children. So interesting. The children, his biological sons, he's got a younger son and an older son. The older son looked like he got a little trouble with the law. He was drinking a little bit. And so the family was like not really happy with him. Then the younger son kind of sort of stepped up. But then the younger son was always just seeking approval from the dad, and which drove him to drink out. Listen, it's just like, the actual what happened is very sad, but I love the character development of each child. Now, originally, Kathleen's biological daughter, she was with the family. Then the DA got to her aunts and showed her the crime scene photos. And they're like, oh, well, there's no way this could be an accident. Then they got the daughter. They got the daughter over there. So now the daughter hate Michael. And now, but you know, the children were such a family unit. Like whatever the parents, Michael and Kathleen, the kids were the kids. The kids were like siblings. And I respect that because I have a lot of brothers and sisters, like, you know, from other marriages. And like, you know, despite we might have different parents, different moms, dads, like, you know, we're siblings. And so interesting to see the breakdown of the siblings. There is one sister who comes to be gay, and you know the family always worries about her because she had, like, you know, some mental health issues. And she always talks about how the family, we don't talk. And that was just something for me that I thought was so interesting, because I feel like in times my family is such a close-knit family, but we don't communicate, although we talk. But when anytime it's like a time to have a difficult conversation or something like that, like, we don't really, like, we kind of sort of sweep things under the rugs, like the Petersons a little bit, but we ain't killing nobody. Nobody falling down no steps. That's not what I'm saying. But it's so interesting. Then the other sister, who is blood sisters with the one sister who happens to come out as gay, her role, she feels like she always has to watch the sister, and she can't really live her life. And through it all, the children are, you know, supporting Michael, other than Kathleen's daughter. And as the show goes on, and these appeals, we get to see a different perspective of Michael, that actually he's a jerk. He's kind of mean to the kids. This man ain't never really worked. He was bleeding Kathleen dry. His son's wife, his son's mother, who used to be married, he's still hitting them up for money. Like, and you get to see a different side and a different perspective of Michael. Originally, he said Kathleen knew about these men, and, you know, he never had sex with any of them. And then, child, we learn he does. It's some escorts. And listen, I didn't heard where on the street is. Some of the story is closer to this podcast network than, you know, whatever. And if you know, you know. But again, makes it even more interesting for me. Then he falls in love with the French producer, who he essentially is lying to her in ways as well, because she feels like she knows it all and wants to advocate for him. But then when he gets out on this Alfred plea, she finds out more information. The documentary is still filming, because now, you know, it's like Serial. They want to keep the updates and follow all of this other stuff. And then when they are doing the updated documentary, he tells them that Kathleen did not know. Listen, I know I'm all over the place with this, but The Staircase show on Netflix, HBO Max, A+, excellent. It was just riveting. And the last scene after Michael gets out after 6 years, they keep trying to retry the case. They finally get a break. And then he takes an Alford plea, because the state realizes that because it's so long, there are a lot of things that came out that the state, that we learn about the state, that what they was doing, it'll be a hard case to prove. And so they decide to take the Alfred plea, which essentially basically is saying that you can maintain your innocence. However, you are saying that you are guilty to like a lesser charge. Essentially, you're still guilty. And, you know, you get this different perspective of Michael, and like the last image of him, like it just shows Michael. You just see him. And it is so interesting, because it's like, you know, you really think differently of him. And they say to this day, he maintains his innocence, but I don't know. Purple Pants Posse. So listen, if y'all seen, and I know some of y'all seen The Staircase, shout out to my girl Summer, who was like, baby boy, there's a scene in my head and I'm trying to figure out, well, which scene is it? Is it with Is it when we see Kathleen die multiple times? Or is it baby boy in the steam room? Or is it just him with his escapades with these men? And again, there's just so many different things that I like think about when I think to this again, despite Kathleen dying, because that is very sad. But I think the life that Michael felt as though he had to live because the society, you know, they look negatively on bisexual men. And, you know, a lot of women are like, oh, I would never date a bisexual man. But reality is some of y'all are married to gay men. Some of y'all have dealt with bisexual men because this stigma. And it's like, I say that to say that it brings a lot of different things into question in my mind that have nothing to do with Kathleen dying, just more about how the society thinks of different things and different people. It's just so interesting. And when I say like it was, I started it one afternoon after work, child, I was up till 4:45 in the morning because I just had to finish. I had to know what was going on. Then I learned about the documentary, and I really hope the documentary is the documentary that this crew was filming, that they show during the series, because for me, that's going to be so interesting. But listen, let me know what y'all think. Let me know if y'all think Michael did it. Let me know if y'all believe the owl theory. It's just so good. And I know I'm late on it, but sometimes when you discover something, The Staircase on HBO Max. Let your baby boy know what you think.
Barb's got a message. Barb's got a message. Barb's got a message for you. Barb's got a message for you. Oh, and I hope it comes true.
Hi, this is Miss Barb, and yes, once again, I've come across a piece written by Nikki Bannis, and I would so like to share it with you. What if, just for today, you slowed it down to allow yourself more moments of peace in the in-betweens? The little moments in between waking up and getting started with work. The small moments in between leaving and arriving. What if, just for today, you allowed yourself just a few more slow moments to remember how precious this life really is? To remember that it all really, really is okay. Even if it doesn't feel like it right now. What if you allowed yourself just a few moments to remember that in the big, big picture of this all, you are perfect. You are in perfect time and on the perfect path to where you are meant to go. What if, just for today, you took it all just a little bit slower. Love you.
Who's the freak? Who's the freak? Who's the freak of the week? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that freaky, freaky, freak? Freak of the week might be me, might be you, might be.
And we are on to this week's Freak of the Week. And I got to thinking, I said, you know what? I've been so busy with P-Valley. I've been so busy trying to celebrate Pride Month that I forgot that your baby boy forgot to congratulate the class of 2022. Listen here. This week's Freak of the Week is to the class of 2022. I just want to say here at the Purple Pants Podcast, we congratulate you. Okay, graduating pre-K, graduating kindergarten, graduating middle school, graduating eighth grade, graduating high school, graduating college, getting your doctorate degree, becoming a lawyer. If you are in a trade school and you got a certificate, we salute you. You went online and took an online class and you passed that class. We salute you. Honestly, I just want to say congratulations to everyone that is the class of 2022. It does not matter what you graduated from, what you got your degree in. I see you and I know how hard it is, as given today's day and age, gas prices, $1,000 a gallon. We're still in a pandemic. Okay. The social climate in this country, it is not easy. And the fact that you were able to make it through and complete it is just an honor in itself. And I just really want to take the time to say congratulations to you. You deserve it. If you know your nephew, your niece, your cousin, your dad, your brother, your son, your neighbor, listen, this is for them. They are the freak of the week. And make sure you go out your way to celebrate them. I'm just so proud of my godson. He graduated eighth grade and is going into the ninth grade. My niece, Miracle, she graduated high school. She's moving on to college. My little cousin Isaiah, he graduated from Central High School. There's so many graduates around me, and I just want to just say congratulations. And again, there are some people that did not graduate. There are some people that, you know, didn't go the formal route. They took a trade. They might have went right into the workforce. But listen, we still celebrate that because you are out here doing what needs to be done. You are bettering yourself. And here on the Purple Pants Podcast, we support that. So again, from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say congratulations to the class of 2022. You did it. We see you. And I am so proud of you. Continue to reach for the stars. If the class of 2022 is this week's Freak of the Week, that means we are coming to an end of another amazing episode. Purple Pants Posse, I can't thank you enough for always listening to your baby boy's perspective and giving me insight and helping me grow and just loving on your baby boy. I appreciate it so much. And thank you. If you could be so kind to ensure that you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you can find a podcast, you can find the Purple Pants Podcast. Ensure that you hit that subscribe button, give your baby boy some 5 stars, write a review, and don't forget to tell a friend, to tell a friend, to tell a friend that it's all about perspective, because it's
the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.